they spoke about your arm not being down beside your side. I mean, this is not Irish dancing.
OTB Sports Radio.
Basketball would have been my main game.
The brand new sports radio station from Off the Ball.
That's my point. Don't play for us if you're a proud Englishman.
Now broadcasting 24 hours a day, live on the Go Loud app, Alexa.
You have a whole new world of possibilities.
Google Home, TuneIn, and offtheball.com/radio.
This is OTB Sports Radio. Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
All right, it's Thursday. That means John Giles is with us live in studio. How are you keeping?
Good, Nathan.
A lot to get through. A big week in the Champions League, particularly last night with Manchester City beating Real Madrid in what feels like probably a landmark victory for Manchester City, who've struggled even under Pep Guardiola on some of these big European nights. When you saw that Manchester City team that was named, before you even saw them lining up in the pitch in a very unconventional tactical setup, when you saw a team without Sergio Aguero, Raheem Sterling, Fernandinho, could you understand what Guardiola was thinking?
Well, I didn't know what he was thinking before I saw saw them on the pitch, Nathan. But I wasn't surprised that, a little bit surprised that Aguero didn't play. Fernandinho didn't expect to play. Sterling was coming back from an injury. So they weren't, I wasn't too surprised at that. But obviously when they lined up, that was the big surprise.
So Gabriel Jesus as a left winger, Kevin De Bruyne, who we saw play as a false nine, as they call it, against Manchester United earlier in the season, basically playing as part of a front two with Bernardo Silva.
Yeah. It was funny enough. It was mostly defensive stuff, Nathan. That obviously, he's, when I saw them playing and the setup, I never saw Guardiola do this before, ever, with Barcelona or any of the teams he managed. So this was totally different, in that he was concentrating mostly on defending, which is the first time I've ever seen him that. Because I always thought with Guardiola, we're going to have the ball, we're going to keep the ball. And we're going to score goals.
With us.
Yeah, so the emphasis all the time was on keeping the ball and scoring goals. This is the first time I ever saw the emphasis on not following that particular tactic, if that's or his way, whatever we want to call it. So it was very, very surprising. And I don't know whether he meant to work it in a certain way, Nathan, but any time I've seen the Guardiola teams, it's go, go, go. We're going to score goals, more goals than you're going to score. And this is totally different. Now, in a way, and I think in a way, I'm only giving you my opinion of how this worked for them. Because when they do what they normally do, they're very, very suspect at the back, as we know, because they can lose goals easy. And they usually score more goals than the opposition. They haven't done that this year. But when he did what he did last night, which was to give the emphasis on defending and actually let the opposition have the ball, now they're not going to struggle at the back. Because he's never going to be caught out. When he normally plays the way he plays, it's all go. The full-backs can go, everybody, centre-back can go. And when they lose the ball, they are suspect at the back. But last night, you see, even though they didn't keep the ball as much as they normally do and didn't harass the opposition as much as they normally do, they weren't giving anything away, right? So then I think Real Madrid, this is not one of the great Real Madrid teams, in my opinion. They weren't able to take advantage of it, Nathan. They might have scored one in the first, they were on top in the first half. But any time City got the ball, they were doing to others what not they normally do. When the opposition get the ball about against City, it's really panic time. That didn't happen last night. There was no panic because they were defending so deep. That when they did get the ball, actually it was Real Madrid who were under pressure to defend. So it was totally different to the way I've seen them for years and years, lining up the team the way he did last night.
So the reasoning behind it then, like you've gone through tactically there why you think it probably worked. Was it a recognition from Guardiola that in these big matches, and maybe the game against Liverpool earlier this season and some of the huge European games they've lost, particularly against Tottenham last year, which was just this chaotic game, brilliant to watch as a neutral, but absolute chaos, that he's looked at those and thought, while being go, go, go will work for us in the Premier League 90% of the time, in Europe it won't. We need something different.
Yeah. Well, he obviously felt that about Real Madrid last night, because that's the way he played. You know, we can only go on what we see out there. So it certainly wasn't a typical Manchester City performance where they get on the ball and they harass the opposition, and that's the way they defend. See, this is where they get into trouble sometimes, Nathan, because they have to get the ball back quickly. If they don't get it back quickly, they're in trouble. Whereas last night, it was the opposite. It was the opposite. They let them have the ball. They were defending. Back. They were never going to be caught out defensively. Well, they were caught out once defensively. That, but it never was going to be on the game. So they never, they didn't harass the opposition in any way. But when they did get it, now the opposite was true, that Real Madrid were throwing everything at them. So when they got at them, then they were under pressure. So it was a drastic change from Guardiola to do what he did. And in the end, it worked out. In the first half, I didn't think there was any way it was going to work.
No.
Because there was only one team playing. That's, that was my opinion. There's only Real Madrid playing. City are not, they're just defending. But obviously it changed as the game went on. I don't think Real Madrid were good enough or are good enough to take advantage of what Manchester City were doing.
Is their manager good enough as well? I know Zidane, obviously one of the greatest players of all time, and his CV in terms of trophies, it's hard to criticise, but it was interesting in the build-up when the two managers were put against each other, and Toni Kroos, the Real Madrid midfielder, was, I don't want to say critical of Pep Guardiola, but talking about the amount of information the players were given, and maybe in big games he overloaded players, whereas Zinedine Zidane, it was seen, the players were given 15 minutes on Manchester City and that was it. Mm. That actually, having gone into such detail, Guardiola, he sort of caught Zidane out, that Zidane couldn't react because there's no way he had prepared for this.
It's very difficult to know, Nathan, because you could get a manager going through everything, right? You know, not talking about either manager last night, but managers generally. And it turns out to be totally wrong in what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like for Guardiola to do what he did was drastic. This was a drastic change for him because any time I've ever seen his teams, it's go, 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 we're going to get at the opposition. This was a totally different. This was giving the opposition the ball. That's what he decided to do. So Zidane wouldn't have known he was going to do that. Mm. Anyway, but he would have assumed, I would imagine, I would certainly assume that they were going to play the way they normally play, and they didn't. And you see, sometimes on the day, Nathan, it's not all about tactics. You know, I mean, we might have said this before. On my take on football is we played when I was at Leeds. We played Swansea, who were a fourth division team, and the second in command came to see us playing. It was in the paper before we played. I've spotted some weaknesses in the Leeds team. Right now, this is Swansea, who were in the fourth division, right? But of course, you can spot. But my take on football: get your own team right.
Yeah.
No, you can concentrate on the opposition, but if you have a weakness defending at left back or right back, it doesn't matter about the opposition. Put your own house in order, and then you go out to play. I mean, I've heard it so many times. Oh, yeah, we went to see them play, and we've seen some. You know, concentrate on your own weaknesses and do it. So I think last night, I think Zidane would have been surprised that they did what they did, as everybody was, I believe. And there wouldn't be a tactic against that, you know what I mean? Even if he'd known that, what else were they going to do on the pitch that they weren't trying to do anyway? You know, like everybody knows up to last night what Guardiola does, which is attack. Well, everybody knows what Klopp is going to do.
Mm.
But can they stop it? You know, because they're not good enough to stop it. And they have their own weaknesses as well. So it wouldn't have been so much that, well, Zidane was surprised at what he... I say he was surprised. And I say when the game started the first 10 or 15 minutes, he would be pleasantly surprised because City weren't coming at them.
That his team were having lots of possession.
But obviously it changed as the game went on because I don't think Real Madrid had they weren't good enough to make the most of what they have in that particular way. It's not one of the great Real Madrid teams, I don't think. Maybe a few years ago when Ronaldo and these guys were playing.
Well, was Modric at a different level a couple of years ago to where he was last night?
Well, he's not on his own, Nathan, you know. He's still a terrific midfield player. But again, in football, you're only as good sometimes as the players you're playing with, you know. And I think Modric did everything that was asked of him last night in a team that eventually struggled.
Kevin De Bruyne then last night, and I know previously you'd questioned when he played in a more advanced role that he wasn't in the correct positions where you'd want a player of his talent to pick up the ball. Like last night, playing almost as a striker, a strange sort of defensive striker.
Mm.
How did he do?
He did very well. I mean, De Bruyne, I criticised De Bruyne, Nathan, as you know. He's a very, very talented individual. Mm. Very talented individual. What I criticise him for is his attitude a lot of the time. If one of his teammates, if he gives a ball and one of his teammates miscontrols it, he's not getting in there, you know?
Mm.
And he's a gifted lad. Like he was last night for the goal, then the penalty was a different thing. He did score it. He's a very, very talented lad. But there's times, in other words, I think he should be better than he is. I think if he was a real worker and a real team player and doing it all for the team, he'd be one of the greats, I think. But I see him sometimes, he's very moody, to say the least.
Did he show that side that you wanted to see then last night? Because it's Manchester City's biggest game of the season, and he's been playing out of position. He's playing in a role where he's now relying on other less talented midfielders to give him the ball. He didn't seem to throw his toys out of the Premier. He actually seemed to put the head down and do the job.
He did his stuff last night, Nathan. And that's what you want to be doing. All right, Christopher, he doesn't do that every week. Yeah. Why don't you do it every week, you know? And I think what's happened to him last night as well, playing in the position he was playing in, people were getting the ball to him. Now, I don't agree with that generally with De Bruyne. I think he's got the talent to stay in the middle of the field and dictate everything. I think he's got the talent to do that. I don't know if he has the mind to do that. But again, if the team is defending like they're defending, right, and as a group, he wouldn't be exposed in any way. You know what I mean? So when the ball, most of the time, see, a lot of times they didn't have the ball, but when they did have it, then he was in a good position to receive it. And then he could do the damage from there. So maybe, like, if you wanted to get the best out of De Bruyne, maybe you should play that way every week. You know, but you're not going to. I think if he's really doing his stuff, he would be in the middle of the field dictating. I think he's got the ability to do it. There's no doubt about it. Has he got the temperament to it? I haven't seen it. He can be brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. He's a very, very gifted player. Very gifted player. But I'd just like to see him with the Roy Keane attitude, for example. I mean, anytime I talk about it, we go to Roy Keane because the attitude was 80-90% of Roy Keane's game. You know what I mean? Roy Keane wasn't as gifted as a player as De Bruyne is. Now, I don't want to run right because he's great at what he did. But the attitude that he have, if you put that attitude into De Bruyne, he would be the best player in the world.
Everything we've seen from Pep Guardiola would suggest he didn't stumble into this formation, that a lot of planning and thought went into this. But you going back to we traditionally think of Manchester City as an all-out attacking force, just trying to score. Do you think we're going to see this sort of style from them more often now, between now and the end of the season?
I would doubt it. I would doubt it, Nathan. What he's been doing in the go, get on everything, has been going on for a long time. But since he started in management, so long as that, 10 years, 12 years, I don't think he's suddenly discovered that, no, this is the way to do it. That's my take on it. I don't think he would have been doing
it. It does show they have another option, though.
Of course. Well, all teams have options to do it. And you see, what happens in football again, Nathan, you know, things went their way a bit last night as well. They got away with it, but they won. See, and once you win, then you're a genius, right? You're a genius. Now, there could be next week he could do the same thing again and lose. Because now, what he did have the courage to do what needed to be done. Because if he hadn't won last night, he'd have been slaughtered. What's Guardiola? Who does he think he is? Going out and playing in the team like that, But he didn't. He had the courage of his own convictions. That's what he believed in. Will he change it? Will he change it to again? I doubt it, because what he's done in previous years has been very, very successful. This is one match. No, is he going to change all that for that? I think it was because it was in his head. He had Real Madrid away. Maybe saw something in him that we didn't see, that this was the best way to do it, and he did it. And good luck to him. You know. To the winner, the spoils, Nathan.
He obviously has the trust of the players as well, that Gabriel Jesus will play out on the left-hand side. And we saw him in the first half in particular, tracking back plenty of times, doing what you would want from a left-sided player. And also from De Bruyne, if there is that maybe issue at times with his attitude, that selflessly he would go and play. Like, a manager asking a player to do something totally out of their comfort zone can backfire quite easily.
Yeah, well, I think, to be fair to him, I think he would definitely have control of the players. I've never seen or read about Guardiola where the players were saying, as we saw sometimes with Manchester United, say with Mourinho, he didn't do this and he didn't do that, and it's very public. And I've never seen that with Guardiola in any of the teams that he's had, whether it be Barcelona, Bayern Munich, City. I haven't seen that. I think he does control the players, that if he asks them to do something, they believe in him. And he insists on him doing it. It's a bit like Klopp at Liverpool.
Yeah.
You couldn't imagine any of the players at Liverpool saying, "Oh, hang on a minute, boss. I don't think you should be doing that." You know what I mean? And I tell you, Guardiola would have the same and the respect at City.
It wasn't perfect for them. Obviously, they lost Aymeric Laporte. It's a 2-1 lead. Sergio Ramos will be missing out as well for Real Madrid. Did you see enough last night to suggest City should get the job done at home in the second leg?
I would fancy them to do it, Nathan, because I don't think it's a great Real Madrid team. Anyway, you know, like they're not what they were two or three years ago when Ronaldo was at his best and a few other players at their best. They're not that Real Madrid team. So I would fancy City. I would doubt if City would play the same way.
Yeah.
As last night, I would doubt that very much at home. So yeah, I think they've done on paper they've done the hardest work. But again, as we know, Nathan, you've got to go and do it. Second leg, you know, we go back to last year when it looked like Barcelona had done the stuff over Liverpool, and Liverpool in the end actually hammered them at Anfield. So it's as they say in the game, all the man said, it's only half time.
Yeah, it's only half time in this chat as well, John. We need to take a very quick break. We'll be back and we'll talk about Chelsea in a moment.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
You're welcome back. It is Thursday on Off the Ball. John Giles is in studio, 53106. You can leave a comment on our social channels. We've been just talking about Manchester City, a rare bright light on a difficult couple of weeks in the Champions League for the English clubs, particularly for Chelsea, who you'd have to say are done in the Champions League for this year, beaten 3-0 at home by Bayern Munich on Tuesday night. Frank Lampard said it was a reality check for everyone. Like, there was some gulf in class between the two teams.
Had to kill them, right? Killed them from the kickoff. They dominated. They played very, very well, actually, I thought, Bayern Munich. Their attitude was good. Defended when they had to. Used the ball when they had to. I thought, you know, Chelsea were a bit lucky to go in at half-time on that scoreline. But they were very good. They were very impressive. You know, Chelsea weren't good, but they were made to look bad as well. It wasn't as if they were playing against another Polish team that just had a good day. I think, to be fair to Frank Lampard, he's very honest, I think, in his comments where he said, we were in a different league.
Yeah, he seemed resigned to the fact that the players Chelsea have right now just can't compete at that level.
They did their best, Chelsea, as they do under Lampard. You know, they try hard, they did their best, but they weren't there. They were just outplayed. And what a player left back looked, Nathan, I can't think of his name.
Alfonso Davies, Canadian international.
He's only 19, isn't he? The pace of him. I couldn't believe the pace of him getting up. Like, there was one time in the first half, like, he let the fella get behind him, and he must have been 3 or 4 yards, and got there, and I think he didn't even give a corner kick away. Unbelievable, but they were very, very good. Lewandowski, is not presenting that right, Lewandowski?
Yeah.
Like, over the years, Nathan, as we know, he's been a great goal scorer. But when I watched them over the years, I thought, great goal scorer, but nothing else. That's changed.
He's added another string.
But he's definitely the complete centre forward. Well, you saw him the other day. He laid on two of the goals and he scored one himself. Like the two passes he laid on for the other.
Gnabry.
Yeah. You know, and he took them well as well. He laid them on brilliantly, you know, unselfish, saw the pass. Years ago, I never saw him playing like that. I thought he was a big centre forward, could be out of the game a long time and scored a couple of goals.
Yeah.
He can still do that, but he's definitely increased his game. I'd say the way he's playing is the perfect centre forward.
When you looked at where Chelsea were this season and the fact that N'Golo Kante has been struggling with injury as well, who's probably their one real world-class player in that team, Frank Lampard, as resigned as he was, and everyone can accept as a gulf in class, like, does a more experienced coach go in there with a better tactical plan, knowing that Bayern Munich are a far superior team, and come up with a way preventing what happened on Tuesday night?
I don't think there is a way, Nathan. You know, I know I'd love to be able to tell you about tactics. The best tactic you can have is good players with the right attitude to go out and play and be honest in what they do. That is the main tactic. There's no great tactic up there that you can pull out and say, on the night, what could Chelsea have done? Actually, all they could do was compete with them better, don't give them as much room as they did. But That's not because they didn't try to do it. It's just that the opposition were better. So it doesn't matter what your tactics are like. The fact is, Bayern Munich have far better players than Chelsea. So if you took the players to give them to Frank Lampard, playing for Chelsea, and the Chelsea players playing for Bayern Munich, Chelsea would have hammered them.
So it's nothing. So it's nothing. It's to do not
with,
on Lampard.
No, it's nothing to do with tactics. He knows. He was very sensible afterwards, where he said we were outclassed.
There's always a lot of reading into a strength of the league of these type of games, and because Liverpool had struggled against Atletico Madrid, Tottenham against Leipzig, it had been three defeats from three for the English clubs initially, and then obviously Manchester City beat Real Madrid. Four English teams were in the European finals last year. Has there been a dip? Even with Liverpool, everything Liverpool have done, because this is a conversation around the Premier League as well. Yeah. Just how great is this Liverpool team? Just how great is the opposition?
Well, I think Liverpool are great, and they can only beat what's in front of them, which they're doing, Nathan. But I think if you look back last year, I think this is why the European teams are doing better now. Mm. The teams that we would expect to drive on haven't. You know what I mean? If you look at Chelsea are not as good as they were last year. Arsenal, those two were in the final, weren't they?
Yeah.
Arsenal are certainly nowhere near as good as they were. Spurs were in the final last year, nowhere near as good as they should be. You know, Manchester United, I think I mentioned, all the top teams, the teams that you would expect to be challenging, even just below Liverpool and Manchester City, are not there, Nathan. You know, got Sheffield United are fifth in the league this year, but Chelsea are not doing it, Arsenal are not doing it, Spurs are not doing it, United are not doing it. You know, Everton, that you wanted, it was not a not such a successful club now, but have been. None of these clubs have come up to the mark. So when they're playing the European teams now, like Leipzig and Bayern Munich the other day, for some reason or other, because of the decline in the teams that you would expect the Premier League to be producing, they're not doing it. So it's making, they're good teams. Bayern Munich are a very good team, as we saw, but you're making, in my opinion, the Premier teams are making them look better.
Yeah. I guess you can't just switch it on in that. No. Like Tottenham, 3 days before they played Leipzig, were played off the park by Aston Villa for half an hour.
Yeah.
You're not just going to turn up 3 days later and it'll all just click into place.
It doesn't happen, Nathan. You don't just turn up. You know, that's why winning the league, is more important even than the Champions League, because it's over 38 matches. You have to do your stuff over those 38 matches. You know, you get some teams, you go, oh, they're a surprise result, they got it. And then they go and get beaten the next week and the week after that. That can happen in football. But the teams who are really doing it, like Liverpool this year, for example, and City last year, that's week in and week out.
Liverpool are going to win the league over the next 2 or 3 weeks, and a lot now will focus on the Atletico Madrid game, and can they get their momentum back? Mm. Like, do you feel that the winter break, the 10 days, 2 weeks that they had off, has sort of stalled Liverpool? Or what you saw against West Ham on Monday night, like, are they back to where they were?
Well, they weren't quite back to where they were the other night. I mean, they did well, and with the help of the goalkeeper, they didn't actually play well. But that happens with teams. But you saw their will to do it. You saw their effort to do it. You saw their honesty to fight their way out of it, which they did, Nathan. But you can you just go back what you said the first part of the question?
Just in terms of the fact that they need to get back to, say, where they were 2-3 months ago by the time they play Atletico Madrid.
You meant about the break. But if you go back a few weeks, Klopp was nearly crying about the fixture list they had. You know what I mean? You can't have it both ways.
And not lucky enough,
because he has a terrific squad, it actually wasn't any big deal for them to do what needed to be done.
Yeah.
Because they good players and then rest players. Actually, the team they played the other night had been rested for, by the standards nowadays, quite a while.
Yeah, they had a decent break. A couple of other things we wanted to touch on as well. There's a story today that the Premier League are planning a Premier League Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You're already in the English Football Hall of Fame. That's existed since 2002. It's housed at the National Football Museum in Manchester, which is well worth a visit if anyone hasn't been there. Do you remember being inducted? Was it something that was important? Because Hall of Fames in America, in American sport, are this huge deal, these massive televised events. It's never really been the case in this part of the world, but to be in the Hall of Fame and to be in around some of the names that are there, was that something that was important?
It's nice. When you finish playing, you finish playing, and usually you don't get into those Hall of Fame until you're finished. But I enjoy the night out, because there was players there of my generation, and before me, that I'd never met, and that's where I find more enjoyable than anything else on the night. Say, on the night, there's a lad called Wilf Mannion, I think, was there on the night, and that particular deal, who was a great player for England and that. I never saw him play, but he was one of my heroes in that. And there was quite a few players at that night coming from the older days, and it was great to meet them. And players I'd played against, obviously, and players who played after my time. So it's always nice to meet them. Players generally are.
Is
really
it something
good.
The kids and the grandkids have been along to see? Would, have been along to the museum?
I don't think so.
We get them along. You show a bit of respect.
You mean in England?
In England and in Manchester, yeah.
Yeah. No, I've never been there myself, to be quite honest.
Right.
Yeah, but it's good. It's nice to be recognised yeah. like that. It's not the end of the world if you're not Nathan, you know. But it's better than not being picked. Let's put it that way.
You're in good company. Six Irish players in the current Hall of Fame. Yourself, Roy Keane, Liam Brady, Paul McGrath, Dennis Irwin, Mark Lawrenson.
Yeah. Well, it's great to be among those lads. You know, they were the great players of their time. For the Irish team and for the club football, yeah.
The Premier League are obviously entitled to have a Hall of Fame if they want, but it does again feed into this. Football started in 1992.
Yeah, that gets on my nerves. Mm. I must be honest, Nathan. You know, if like all the records, all the things that we talked about, I think last week was when we were talking about Jimmy Greaves. Were you talking about Jimmy Greaves?
Yeah, a couple of weeks back. Yeah.
You know, and Jimmy Greaves, it came up in his time. Alan Shearer is the leading goal scorer in the Premier League, right? Which is great. Jimmy Greaves, I think, scored, was it 50, 70 goals? Did you see the documentary on Jimmy Greaves? Very good. I think he scored 50, 60, 70 goals more
than Alan Shearer.
Not mentioned. As if it all started. And as we know, you can't have a present without a past.
Mm.
And like Manchester United suddenly didn't become one of the richest clubs in the world. It was because of the 1948 team with Jackie Carey, the great Irish player, the Munich air disaster, the Manchester United coming on.
Winning the European Cup.
Long before 1992, Manchester United had a huge history, as most of the other clubs did. So you can't just wipe that out and say, oh, here we go now, we're starting from scratch. I think it's dreadful.
Well, even Alan Shearer scored, so he's, 260 Premier League goals. He'd been playing for 4 or 5 years in the top division of English football before that were also wiped out. Funny enough, this came up from an Irish point of view a couple of weeks back because Shane Long scored and he moved up to third in the all-time list of Irish Premier League scorers.
Yeah.
And I was putting this online, a couple of people were saying, well, what's the all-time list? Because again, football didn't start. So I spent a couple of evenings going back through goals of Irish players since, I think, 1960, which is sort of when, 59-60 is sort of when you can first go back to get the exact records. Frank Stapleton is the all-time leading Irish scorer, ahead of Robbie Keane in the English top flight. 136 goals for Frank Stapleton. Robbie Keane is 126. And I think everyone in Ireland remembers Frank Stapleton as a great player, but I didn't. For some reason, I wouldn't have had him ahead of Robbie Keane. And I know he played for Manchester United and Arsenal and had a long career. But
oh, yeah, Frank was a great goal scorer. Yeah, definitely. I think as time passes, Nathan, obviously younger players come along and you don't think of so much of Frank Stapleton or Liam Brady, who are these great players in their day, you know.
You're fourth on the list. Only Niall Quinn, Robbie Keane and Frank Stapleton ahead of you, all of whom were obviously strikers. 91 goals in the English top flight. I think you had 115 in total for Leeds. And it's only when you see it written down there, and I know you've spoken about 115 goals before, like for a midfielder, that is a remarkable rate of scoring.
Yeah, well again, in those days, you didn't have the holding midfield player. Mm. Like when I played, most of my career was at Leeds, where there was Billy Bremner and myself, two little guys. Billy scored 115 goals for Leeds. I scored 115 goals. And they say to people now even, because I'm not a holding player fan by any means, and I would say to people now, well, look at the Leeds team. Bremner scored 115 goals. I scored 115. Which of us was the holding player? You're the holding player at the right time.
Mm.
You know, but there's nothing wrong with scoring goals as well. You know, if you're in it, because when you're noted for scoring a few goals, it's a big help you, Nathan. Because when you were playing, say there's lads who are playing midfield and they grew up near the edge of the box, but they're noted for not having a good shot, then the defenders can take their place.
Okay.
Well, he's not going to shoot. So therefore, we can do this or we can do that. But like Bremner was, well, luckily enough, I had a good shot. Then, what they're scared of, first of all, is you having a shot. So they're coming out to block you. That's the time you can slip it through or go past them.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because the worst thing they can do, it's the worst of two options. Do you go for them or do you let them have it?
Mm.
Well, if you let him have the ball, then you're only 20 yards, 25 yards out. You should be really scoring, or a good chance of scoring from that distance. So now they have to come out at you, you know, to block the shot. And as soon as they come out blocking the shot, then it leaves it open to slip a ball through at the right time.
Of those goals, obviously, like you had an unbelievable record of scoring penalties throughout your career, but did you put pressure on yourself in terms of how many goals you wanted to score at the start of a season?
Not really, Nathan, no. No, you just, well, if it's there to, if it's there for the taking, you take it. But I never put it, like, as a midfield player, your main thing is concentrating on playing well. The goals, obviously, are a bonus on it, and a very important bonus.
Because that does feel like it's changed, even in the last 5 or 6 years, because you think of Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard, who were seen as goal-scoring midfielders. Now, where most teams probably play three up front, midfield, like you look at that Liverpool side, there's no great goal scorers amongst them. There's no great pressure on those players, it feels, to score goals.
No, well, they have the pressures up front for the lads up front to score the goals. The thing is with Lampard and Gerrard, they were terrific players. But actually, they were goal scorers. You know, like, I never considered them genuine midfield players controlling the game. That wasn't their game. That's why I think they didn't really get on it with England. Not them, but England. You see, I think England should have been picking Paul Scholes and one or the other of the two.
Right.
Because they were two terrific goal-scoring players. And they had the reputation, as we know, there was a saying, they were great at getting at the end of things, which they were. But to get to an end, you have to have a beginning.
So would Lampard and Gerrard have played 10, 15 yards further up the pitch than you and Bremner?
Yeah, definitely. They wouldn't be linking the play. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Paul Scholes linked the play, right? But Gerrard and Lampard are goal scoring. They're fabulous players with the goals that they scored. Spectacular goals. And I think Frank Lampard's scored 250 goals.
For Chelsea,
right? But that's why they didn't, in my opinion, they didn't hit it off with England. England didn't play well when the two of them played, because the two of them were...
Nobody wanted to do the basics.
Well, they couldn't.
Mm.
And, to be honest, they didn't. They weren't players that linked up back to front. Paul Scholes was.
Mm.
You know, definitely, Paul Scholes is an all-round midfield player. I don't think Gerrard and
Lampard
were all-round players. They were terrific at what they did. Like, if you look at Gerrard, who's the Spanish lad that played for midfield for...
Busquets. Xabi Alonso.
Alonso. Now, he was a genuine midfield player. He would have linked up to back to front. And Gerrard, that was fine if Gerrard, having a Gerrard in your team, as long as you had somebody to. But when they played for, they were picked all the time for England, and they were the two of the main midfield players.
So,
and neither of them could link it up.
Mm.
They could get at the end of it, brilliant. But you have to start it to get at the end. You know.
So, do you think that type of midfield player that you were and that Bremner was? Do you think that type of player is gone? Because I'm thinking of the midfielders of the moment, that same midfielders you would talk positively about. N'Golo Kante doesn't score many goals. Luka Modric has never scored many goals. Say, Sergio Busquets, again, more the holding midfielder type. Mm. That player who could sort of do it all and get the goals, there's no expectation on any midfielder to do that anymore.
No, it's not usual. And I'm not saying it because I scored a fair few goals, but it's not usual. It's a bonus.
Yeah.
It's a bonus on it. You know what I mean? If you can score goals well, but like Bobby Charlton, I was telling you, Bobby's the best player I ever played with or against. Bobby scored a record, 270 goals, and he was a genuine midfield player. Mm. Like, Bobby could link it up. Well, Bobby didn't so much link it up as do it on his own.
Right.
He was totally instinctive, Bobby. You know, he could good control. He was quick as lightning. He had a great shot on both feet. And I think I said to you before, and something that can be misunderstood, he wasn't an enjoyable player to play with, Bobby. Because you'd be in a good position a lot of times. Bobby, you'd be on it, and you should be told at Old Trafford, let it go simple and quick.
Mm.
A lot of times, and I played with Bobby, didn't get it. Just when you're about to say, I'm like Bobby, having a shot from 30 yards or 40 yards.
And in top corner.
So he didn't need me.
Right, yeah.
Bobby, what was the type of player? Like, if you go back to Bobby playing in the World Cup in 1966, he didn't have great midfield players around him there. Bobby, Nobby Stiles was a defensive midfield player, more of a tackler, and Alan Ball came into the team later on. Martin Peters came into it. Ball was a very, very good player, really good, genuine good midfield player. But Bobby could do it on his own. And like from 30 yards, 40 yards, either foot on a muddy ground. Loads of times I played with him. Oh, Bobby, fine. He couldn't say anything.
And could you accept that at the time? Now looking back, you can recognise. Like,
oh, no, I recognised it then.
Right, but playing with him at the time, you could accept walking off the pitch that you weren't able to show the best of you because he was doing what he was doing?
There was nothing about me doing the best. I could do my own bit.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, as a link, like when I played with Bremner and I played together, we had a lot of passes to each other to get up to the edge of the penalty area, right? But Bobby, he could go past people. He was quick as lightning and get up to 40. He didn't have to get up to the edge of the box. He was 40-yard man. So I couldn't say anything. How could I say anything to him? going over hugging him. Scoring that many times.
Like, to be scoring that many from long range, presumably the way he hit the ball, it wasn't just all about power.
There was a lot of power in it.
There was a lot of power, but presumably there was...
He was a great kicker of the ball, Bobby. But he wasn't...
Was he unusual in the way he kicked the ball?
No. It was classical. It was a classical way to hit the ball, the way Bobby hit it. Right foot up. If it was left footed, you get your right off level with the ball. And you're having this balance and smack. And Bobby could do it both ways. But I could do my own bit in my own way doing it. But it wasn't... when I was at Leeds, we were known as a partnership, Bremner and myself as a partnership. Like, I didn't play that long with Bobby anyway, but we certainly weren't considered a partnership. Yeah. Bobby was the partnership.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't resent that in any way. Yeah. I mean, I keep saying it.
Best thing for the team.
Best player I ever played with, best player I ever played against. Bobby didn't need anybody else.
John, great stuff as always. Thanks for coming to the studio. We'll talk to you next week.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.